The first page will overlap with what you've already received in the histology class on female genital tract. We won't be covering the uterus or the vagina, but I want to now re-explore the organisation of the ovary in terms of the development of the oocyte and the support cells that surround the oocyte, and we call the support cells altogether a follicle. And so the process of development of the structure which supports oocyte development is called oogenesis for the oocyte, or follicular genesis for development of the whole follicle. I think we should start out by looking at the ovary itself and how oocytes form. And this first image that I'm showing you here is an infant ovary. And what I want you to note is that this is the cortex of the ovary out here, the tunica albuginea, and this thick layer here represents all of the primordial oocytes. And in the embryo, these develop from what are known as the primordial germ cells. So primordial germ cells form the primordial oocytes. They also will develop into spermatozoa, or spermatogonia in the male gonad. The first thing to notice is that there's a very thick cortical layer of these oocytes, much thicker than we see in the adult ovary. And in the medullary region, we can see vascularization, some blood vessels and lots of stromal cells, support cells. What feature is absent from this infant ovary? What's missing in the infant ovary here? Any idea? You've done the adult. What's missing or different from the adult ovary to this infant ovary? Thank you very much. I had to get all the way down here before I got an answer. You cannot see any later stages of follicular genesis. There are no preantral or antral follicles present. There is no development of the follicles in this infant. So we only see these primordial oocytes. This very thick cortex reflects what is actually occurring inside the ovary during generation itself. And I've shown it in this graph that we can see here, whereby the total number of oocytes increases prenatally. So the maximal number of eggs that a woman will ever have occurs before birth. So we get a vast mitosis, or an increase in the total number of oocytes within the ovary, up to about 7 million or so. And from just before birth or around birth time onwards, there is substantial loss of all of these oocytes that have been generated prenatally. So the maximum before birth, and we get a loss of these oocytes by programmed cell death or apoptosis, such that it drops during childhood down to about 2 million or so. And by the time we reach puberty, we're left, well, we, the female, is left with about 400,000 oocytes. Now, this is many more than any woman will need during her entire reproductive life. If we start at puberty at about 12 or 13 years of age and run through to the end of the reproductive life at menopause, then releasing a single oocyte every month or 28 days will only need about 400 to 500 oocytes out of this bigger cohort. So there are substantially more oocytes than will be released during reproductive life. But this isn't to say that these other oocytes will not begin to develop into follicles. So we have continuously within the ovary a cohort or a range of oocytes, primordial oocytes, developing more than the one that will be released at ovulation. So now, when we go back and look at the image of the whole ovary, this is the one which we saw in histology again. I remind you the general organisation that we have a cortex, a cortical region around the outside of the ovary with a thick connective tissue layer on the outside, the so-called tunica albuginea. And underlying that will be all of our primordial follicles, which contain the oocyte, the earliest stage of the oocyte. As the follicles develop, the oocyte gathers around it a number of support cells, granulosa cells, cuboidal cells form an initial layer around the oocyte, and this layer will become multiple layers, and around that will be two fecal layers that will form. All of this will occur before we develop an antrum, and this is the preantral stage. And then as the follicle grows in volume, fluid accumulates in the granulosa layer and a space forms, and that is the antrum of the follicle, or the antral stage of follicle development. It's a large fluid-filled space, and this fluid is a space into which the oocyte can extend. It's attached to one of the walls, and it's also the fluid that's released at ovulation along with the oocyte and its supporting granulosa cells, the corona radiata. All of these follicles are mainly in the cortical regions, and of course our ovulatory follicle, or the one which is most sensitive to hormones, the largest generally, when it breaks and ruptures the surface and releases the oocyte with a follicular fluid, is the process of ovulation at day 14 of the cycle, approximately. So we can see all of these primordial oocytes. Notice that there's many fewer of them than we saw in the infant ovary. You can see a range of pre-antral follicles and the later stage developing antral follicle. Now, the largest cell in these follicles is the oocyte, and here's an example of the earlier stage of a preantral stage where we've got just two layers of granulosa cells surrounding the oocyte. And around the oocyte itself is a thick pink acellular layer, and what are we going to call that layer? The zona pellucida, yes. A special extracellular matrix which is specific to the oocyte and contains three glycoproteins that are unique to this extracellular matrix. It's synthesized by the oocyte itself, so it lays down this matrix outside of it, and it separates the oocyte from the supporting granulosa cells. Now, all of these purple cells inside the follicle here, these are all granulosa cells, but we do also tend to give them different names depending upon their geographic localization. So the cells which attach the egg to the wall in this region here we call the cumulus oophorus, and the cells that radiate around directly in contact with the zona pellucida here and will be released at ovulation along with the egg, we call the corona radiata. They radiate out from around the egg. So these are the cells within the follicle here. In addition to that, we have two layers that lie outside the granulosa layer, and you can just make them out here within the stromal tissue of the ovary, an internal fecal layer and an external fecal layer. The internal layer is mainly involved in hormonal function, so it's involved in the release of estrogen and progesterone. The external layer will contain within it a lots of connective tissue and some smooth muscles, and is thought to have a role in ovulation, but it also holds the follicle structurally together. So when we look down here, we've got a fecal layer. This will be the internal and the external layers here. And you'll notice that within the internal layer, these red structures, these are capillary beds. So it's vascularized. We have maternal blood vessels running in there. And why do we have so many maternal blood vessels in the inner fecal layer? No, the other way around. Their role is to gather hormones. They collect hormones that are being released and put them into maternal circulation. So we've got blood coming in. There'll be a venous system going out from there as well. And that'll be carrying it away. But also these capillary beds are also bringing in the other endocrine factors from the maternal system, stimulating development of the follicle. Notice there are no blood vessels within the granulosa layer and no blood vessels associated with the oocyte. I did mention it in the lecture, but I'll mention it again today, in that humans, the development of the follicle, and there are many different classifications, but let's stay with the simplest of them all, which is primordial, the ones out in the cortex, preantral, the ones which have the layers of follicle cells around it but don't have a space, antral, the time and when we get a follicular fluid space forming, and then the final stage, the preovulatory. And an alternative name for that is, which you'll see everywhere, is a graafian follicle, the largest one that will be released. Now, going back, the development of this follicle, follicular genesis, is not within a single menstrual cycle. It takes more than 28 days to develop the ovulating follicle. It takes approximately 3 menstrual cycles to get complete development of a preovulatory follicle or graafian follicle. Now, during this time, more than that single follicle that will be released develops. A large number of them will be going through the process of development, and we could see this in the ovary above. There's a range of different follicle development stages shown here, preantral and antral. The idea is that you've got a population from which you select the one which is most sensitive or the largest to hormonal stimulation from the follicle stimulating hormone and luteinizing hormone. The remainder of the population that have been developed and aren't released, well, the early stages may wait till the next cycle, but a lot of them will die by a process called atresia. And so a lot of follicle development results in nothing. These follicles degenerate, and the process of degeneration can occur any time from this early preantral stage right the way through to an antral stage. So we get degeneration or atresia of the follicle through any of those time points. So this initial picture that I showed you here, the snapshot in histology of the whole ovary, is actually showing two processes occurring in parallel. We've continually got, following puberty, the development of follicles from the outer cortical layer as they grow inwards, and we've also got a population of follicles which are degenerating at the same time. We've got two dynamic processes occurring in this single snapshot that you're looking at here. The last thing I'll mention to you is that typically in humans, a single follicle is released at ovulation. This can be from one ovary or the other. It can be from the same ovary for your entire life. The only time we see more than one released is under fertility treatments, which stimulate the ovaries to release and develop more follicles, called superovulation. Or if the mother has an abnormal endocrine system, so it can be the result of abnormalities in the endocrine system of the mother. Have a look at this first page, revise the histology of the ovary, and then we'll come back and talk about gametogenesis in the male.